News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 807. I guess Trump is back from NATO already? Back
in D.C.? I think he returned last night. The White House posted Daddy's home.
a man on the move, for sure. He went basically, he went from what he did over the weekend.
To the Hague for the NATO summit.
This was this past weekend, right? Am I losing my mind? Was this past Saturday?
So Friday morning, 6 days ago, we said Trump just gave Iran 2 weeks to come to an agreement. And I believe I said Friday morning, that either means they're going to come to an agreement or Trump's going to bomb them today or tomorrow. And Saturday, or Friday night, I guess, technically, Saturday morning.
Saturday night for us, right?
Yeah.
I think that's when you texted
me. So,
yeah,
it's been less than a week since the bombs were dropped, and a lot's happened since then.
He went right from there to The Hague, where the rest of the nation, pretty much sitting on their thumbs, you know, compared to Trump, they are.
Mm-hmm.
He may have just taken out one of the biggest threats in the world, if not, you know, it's up there. And there's been no terrorism since that I've noticed or headlines. In any event,
at least not in the United States,
right. But he showed up there, and suddenly the tide has turned. He was almost greeted like a hero. At NATO, he had this, you know, kind of a war against, you know, not war, but him and the war of words with EU and NATO, it seemed. And now it was like flowers at his feet.
Was it the last NATO summit was in 2018 that Trump was in attendance for. And I think that was the one, maybe you guys can correct me. There was one of the more iconic pictures of Trump, which there have been a bunch of them. But remember when he was sitting at a table and you had all of these other, that might have been a G7 meeting, but you had all these other world leaders around him. And he's just sitting there looking into the camera while they're all like bickering and arguing behind him. And you had Shinzo Abe there, I think, too. And that just kind of a reminder, remember how hostile, and they still are, but in the first Trump term, no one was willing to come to grips that he was the president and to start figuring out how he worked and how they could work with the United States. They just wanted to deflect until they could get out of there and get to a better president for their aims.
Yeah.
And so they've been pushing forever to have NATO up their spending on defense, the percentage of GDP they spend on defense. And they're getting there. I guess Spain is the only one who has not agreed to go to 5% of spending on defense by 2030 by 2030 or over the next 10 years. And that's what this new NATO Secretary General, I mean, that's what he was assigned to do, was to
get along
schmooze.
With Trump.
To get Trump to be a little friendlier with NATO. And while a lot of the Europeans, but a lot of people that are affiliated with NATO were uncomfortable, I think, with how much they focused on Trump during the summit. And it was one of the shortest written statements out of a NATO summit they've had in years, because it was really all, it seemed to be Trump. About schmoozing Trump and trying to get him to act a little bit further on Russia.
Yeah, now they need Trump, and they're suddenly, and also that this, I would say that the early on in this administration, Vance's trip to Europe, that said a lot. I mean, he was on.
It set the tone, didn't
set
it?
Set the tone.
Even though Trump had already set the tone, but that was, we mean business.
Right. That speech was maybe 20 minutes long or so, and it wasn't quite blistering, but it was like, okay, here's who America is. Mm-hmm. Here's who we are. Here's what we're about to do.
Yeah, and he was also kind of like, here's who you used to be.
Yeah. Yeah,
you used to be a different kind of country, and now you guys have gone the complete other way.
So back to the strikes, Trump's precision strikes on Iran. Listen to the Iran's foreign ministry. This is a spokesman for Iran. He told Al Jazeera, quote, "Our nuclear installations have been badly damaged, that's for sure." So he's saying it's so. We still don't know to what degree, obviously. Israel and their intelligence is saying it's so.
And they said they were on the ground. They actually made it to the site. I don't know if they could get underneath the ground, but they were there.
And this is what Trump had to say about those same strikes.
We're going to talk to them next week with Iran. We may sign an agreement. I don't know. To me, I don't think it's that necessary. I mean, they had a war. They fought. Now they're going back to their world. I don't care if I have an agreement or not.
He's almost like talking about it in complete past tense. Mm-hmm. We did what we needed to do. This is Trump now. This is not me, but I'm just saying what he's saying, and others around him now are starting to voice this opinion that the strikes were devastating. Again, we don't know what to what degree. And then you've got the leak.
Mm-hmm. The low-level paper pusher, they're saying.
Yes, explain all of that, because it's almost like not giving credit to the work that was done. That's what Trump would say about
and,
all of that.
I haven't checked. I should have. We were doing a radio show, but you had a Hegseth presser at 7 this morning.
Yeah, that's right, going on now.
My guess was that it was going to be about the strike, and Trump was basically in a Truth Social post saying, hey, give these pilots some credit.
Yeah.
This was one of the most effective and devastating strikes we've ever seen. And having trouble pulling it up. One of the quotes he said, and I have the audio, but it's not coming, said, somebody said in a certain way it was so devastating, actually. If you look at Hiroshima or if you look at Nagasaki, that ended a war too. This ended a war in a different way. So he's saying it was the strikes that completely shut everything down here. And you have this initial report that came out. This was a report from the Defense Intelligence Agency. And in that report, they said, well, basically, this is a first report. We really don't have a whole lot of information. But it kind of was saying that it wasn't a successful strike. And, of course, you know how that came on Tuesday. CNN was the first to report it and said it really didn't set Iran back by that much. Well, since then, you've had several other reports come out. Like Dan said, the CIA put out its own. You have the UN Atomic Agency. You have Israel. You have the president and his entire administration saying, no, you guys don't understand. This was a real hit. They didn't have enough time to get. It's not as easy as you think to move the uranium out of these holes, and that they were surprised when he gave him that two-week timeline and he hit him the next day. I don't know how much any of that's accurate. I would imagine they still have facilities that are secret that maybe they've been getting to work on enriching uranium. I don't know. It's Iran. I have no idea.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
But you see the war of words going on here, and it seems like they're going to go put everything they have into finding out who leaked this. And it is interesting that it was leaked to the same person who
to CNN.
To CNN, the exact same person who put out the Hunter Biden laptop story was Russian disinformation. Yeah, I mean, it was the exact same journalist.
Same journalist. That was the guy that had the story with the, what was it, 50 officials signed off on the fact that that was Hunter laptop was a BS story.
Mm-hmm.
That was his.
This was, and I think it was a female reporter.
Okay.
Hagerman or something like that. I had her name right here.
Bertrand. Yeah.
It's Natasha Bertrand. She's the one who booked.
Hagerman's New York Times.
Now, and Maz, so he texted in, and this is something I think I said or was thinking. He said, CNN was saying we don't need to bomb Iran's nuclear production facilities because they're years away from a bomb. And now after we bomb, they say the bombing was ineffective and only set it back a couple of months. Celeste here at the station, actually, I can't believe I didn't really think of this, and maybe it's not the case, but she said, yeah, is it possible that the Trump administration is floating fake news to these to some of these media that they've been at war with for years, like the CNN and AP, in order to make them look bad when those assessments end up coming out to be untrue? That would be 4D chess, as people are always saying, with Trump.
It would be.
I think they'd rather just have an airtight, no leaks White House.
Yeah, and I think
intelligence
rather,
agency.
Yeah, I think that's what they would like to have. They would like to have a media that doesn't treat one side this way and the other this way, and that seems to be what's going on again now. But go ahead.
And there's been some movement too during this meeting at NATO, and Trump, of course, you know, he's gone after NATO so many years. It was totally different these last couple of days. And the whole daddy thing, it's either I guess it's creepy, kind of, depending on the context you think it's been used in. But the NATO Secretary General Rudy, basically, he was asked his opinion on Trump using the F word when he said Iran and Israel don't know what they're doing. And what he said, sometimes daddy needs to keep the kids in line.
Yeah.
And then there's a great video after that. They had Trump speaking to the NATO press, up there at the summit. And you had Marco Rubio standing behind him. And she asked his opinion, one of the journalists, about the NATO Secretary General calling him daddy. And Rubio just couldn't hold it together.
I know.
he was losing it back there.
And so here's the headline from NATO, I think you'll agree, is basically this.
In a very historic milestone this week, the NATO allies committed to dramatically increase their defense spending to that 5% of GDP, something that no one really thought possible. And they said, you did it, sir, you did it.
How about that?
That's so incredible.
And I noticed Chris Coons, who's a Democrat from Delaware, not that long ago, was saying, look, you push NATO, you're going to destroy NATO with your attitude and with your demands. Now he's over. He's at NATO. I heard him talking about that agreement, giving no credit to
the
man who did it, just saying that America's walking out with a much better deal now. And I thought, well, isn't that convenient?
Yeah, it's pretty typical, though, I would say. And then as far as the Russia-Ukraine war, Trump has been kind of ramping up the rhetoric against Putin. Remember, Putin said he wanted to help mediate the Iran-Israel war, and Trump said, how about we focus on ending your war first? He told reporters he's surprised that the Ukraine-Russia war hasn't been resolved by now. Called Putin misguided and more difficult than the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, who wore a suit to the NATO summit this week. And then this was really quite a moment there at the summit. And you had a Ukrainian, so she's with BBC Ukraine, but working out of Warsaw, I believe she says, and her husband is fighting in Ukraine.
And they've got two or three kids. I believe so.
And so she asked Trump a question here about supplying Ukraine with missile defense. And Trump started kind of digging into her life. And a pretty interesting moment here at the NATO.
Very human.
BBC News Ukrainian.
Where are you from?
I'm from Ukraine.
Oh.
So my question to you is whether or not the U.S. is ready to sell anti-air missile systems Patriot to Ukraine. We know that Russia has been pounding Ukraine really heavily right now.
Are you living yourself now in Ukraine?
My husband is there.
Wow.
And
I can see you very, it's amazing.
And me with the kids, I'm in Warsaw actually, because he wanted me to
be. Is your husband a soldier? No?
He's
there now?
Yeah.
Wow. That's rough stuff, right? That's tough. And you're living here?
In Warsaw.
And you're a reporter?
I am.
Good. So let me just tell you, they do want to have the anti-missile missiles, okay, as they call them, the Patriots. And we're going to see if we can make some available. You know, they're very hard to get. We need them too. We were supplying them to Israel, and they're very effective, 100% effective. Hard to believe how effective. And they do want that more than any other thing, as you probably know. That's a very good question. And I wish you a lot of luck. I mean, I can see it's very upsetting to you. So say hello to your husband, okay? Thank you.
Quite a moment there, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
And but not fully committed to providing the Patriot systems to Ukraine, but it does appear he's kind of holding over Putin's head maybe a little more assistance for Ukraine in the war if Putin can't come to something with him here soon.
Yeah, I think Putin, it was funny. I think this was even before, I think you got that right, the timeline on that Putin said to Trump, this is before he did the airstrikes. Putin was like, hey, do you need some help with this? Trump said, no, I've got that handled. We need to work on your stuff and your war. And indeed, he had it handled.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the U.S. Air Force had it handled as a term. But that was before the airstrikes. He was like, no, we've got that one figured out. A lot of confidence.
Yeah. I don't understand how you can keep all of these plates spinning at one time. Plenty of people that he trusts, apparently, especially Rubio, who holds like four or five seats on the in the administration.
I don't even know how you can do it just emotionally. Keep yourself tied down where you can answer, where you can take care of these incredible crises all at once, and then you have setbacks, and you have a lot of reasons to doubt yourself or to not understand, have less confidence that things are going to work out, and then you pull something like they did over the weekend. It's just amazing.
It is. So Rubio did, he jumped in. He said his argument, evidence that a conversion facility – key to converting nuclear fuel from a gas into the form needed to produce a nuclear weapon, had been destroyed. So he's saying just the fact that that conversion facility, even beyond the actual uranium stores, the thing they're using to convert it into the weapon use
was destroyed
in that. And Trump said, you know, all of that uranium is sitting under 30 stories of rubble right now.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to wait and see how true all of that is.
It's 622 FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Morning Stand in Dalton. Your text, we'll check that text line on the way, 251-343-0106. Also talk to Rob Holbert with Lanyap very soon.
This WKRG News Break is brought to you by Roy Lewis Construction. For your next commercial construction project, choose a contractor who offers full-service project management from pre-design to project closeout. Guaranteed quality from start to finish. Roy Lewis Construction.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 and 826.
Yeah, Scott Johnson with Lanyap joining us here. After this segment, a lot to get to with him. We'll get to a lot of local stuff, of course, then. Just kind of a wrap-up of the NATO summit, some of the Iran-Israel strike talk. Saw this text. Randy said, I bet the surgical Iran nuclear strike really caused indigestion in Moscow. When Reagan announced the existence of the stealth bomber around 81, it caused a lot of upheaval and distress at the Kremlin. This strike happened practically right in Russia's backyard, meaning U.S. bombers can reach Russia if needed, just like in 1981. And texter here, hey guys, the IAEA is also saying they've already started to sniff radioactive material being leaked from those spots. As a heavy water complex is needed in order to convert the nuclear matter into weapons grade, they likely did a lot of damage there to those sites. I mentioned Hegseth had that presser this morning. Here's just grab a part of this. I'm not sure exactly what he's going to say here. Let's see, Hegseth.
Because you, and I mean specifically you, the press, specifically you, the press corps, because you cheer against Trump so hard, it's like in your DNA and in your blood to cheer against Trump. Because you want him not to be successful so bad, you have to cheer against the efficacy of these strikes. You have to hope maybe they weren't effective. Maybe the way the Trump administration has represented them isn't true. So let's take half-truths, spun information, leaked information, and then spin it. Spin it in every way we can to try to cause doubt and manipulate the mind, the public mind, over whether or not our brave pilots were successful. How many stories have been written about how hard it is to, I don't know, fly a plane for 36 hours? Has MSNBC done that story? Has Fox? Have we done the story how hard that is? Have we done it two or three times so that American people understand? How about how difficult it is to shoot a drone from an F-15 or 16 or F-22 or F-35? Or what it's like to man a Patriot battery? Or how hard it is to refuel midair, giving the American people an understanding of how complex and sophisticated this mission really was. There are so many aspects of what our brave men and women did that, because of the hatred of this press corps, are undermined because people are trying to leak and spin that it wasn't successful. It's irresponsible. And folks in this room are privy to that information because of the proximity here in the Pentagon. It's an important responsibility. And time again, classified information is leaked or peddled for political purposes to try to make the president look bad. And what's really happening is you're undermining the success of incredible B-2 pilots and incredible F-35 pilots and incredible refuelers and incredible air defenders who accomplished their mission, set back a nuclear program in ways that other presidents would have dreamed. How about we celebrate that?
Wow. Yeah. Going right at him, huh?
I mean, that is, he's got him in the penalty box. He's looking right at him. They're probably looking at each other. They probably don't know how do they respond to that? How do they react? Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what press coverage looks like going forward from today. Maybe some changes?
He specifically went after Fox News reporter Jennifer Griffin.
Wow.
Big, yeah.
Wow.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington.
This morning, Captain Bobby was saying that the conditions were great for his fishing this morning. A little breeze out of the north. I didn't realize that the mornings were starting out so idyllic, because by the time we get out there, it's, I'm about to lay down on the sidewalk and cry.
Yeah, we have it really rough, man. Anyway. Oh, wait, we work inside most of the time. That's
yes,
right.
Yes. Scott Johnson is with Land Yap, and he joins us right now.
Yeah, hey, Scott. Man, so glad to talk to you again. You continue to do great work with Land Yap. So thanks for coming on with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
You've been working on, you're always working on big stories, no doubt about that. But let's talk about the cover for this week, something I think you started to delve into last week, if I remember correctly, at least as far as what you've published. South Alabama Medical and Rehab on Old Shell Road. You've been digging in here. Kind of set this up for us.
Yeah, so a lot of people have seen this place before. You know, it's right across from the Phillips Middle School.
Yep.
You know, I know I run past it frequently because my gym's right there. So it's, you know, kind of a inconspicuous little clinic. It's just like everyone assumes, I think, it's a chiropractor or physical therapy. Mm-hmm. But what most people never realize is that when you go in there, you never see a licensed chiropractor. You never see a licensed doctor. You never see a licensed physical therapist. It's basically like a doc in the box kind of clinic,
right?
And all the clients that go in there have been called or recruited by this telemarketing firm, and it's all happening rapidly. And sometimes within hours of a car accident, these injured, you know, people who are struck or hit and injured are getting phone calls. Directing them to that clinic. So there's a pretty massive, a pretty aggressive solicitation campaign to get new patients there. What people also don't realize, and even the patients who go in, is that you don't realize that the telemarketers are working for the clinic. A lot of people think that they're the insurance company that's calling them, because they'll call and say something along the lines of, "I'm a patient insurance advocate." And then they also don't realize when they go in that they're going to be signing a contingency agreement with another attorney.
Wow.
So they market this as a free injury care rehab, and essentially it's all to get you to sign a fee agreement with an attorney who will then turn around and try and pay for all the care and the legal fees out of a insurance settlement with the at-fault driver insurance company. And then to add on to all of that, you don't realize that the lawyer himself is involved in the clinic and part of its management and ownership.
Wow.
And it's a pretty wild scheme. Kind of just unraveled as Nomura poked at it. Come to find out that this whole kind of model is a blueprint of a chiropractor named Michael Kent Planbeck, who about 20 years ago, this kind of all blew up in Texas. He got sued under the Racketeering Influenced and Criminal Organization Act, the RICO. Mm-hmm. Allstate sued him. The Texas prosecutors tried to go after him. Pretty notorious case in the insurance world, where this chiropractor had created this criminal enterprise of all these layers of law firms, marketing firms, chiropractic clinics. Well, he's not even it's evolved into an even more comprehensive thing now.
Yeah,
you know, where they actually have a lawyer in the mix, and it's been a wild journey, and I mean, it's really unfortunate for all these patients who get in there, especially the people who really are injured. I mean, you go in there and you're not getting any kind of bona fide care,
right? So these people that they get in accidents, how do they, I mean, I'm sure there are ways, there's obviously ways they find out that someone's been in an accident. They get these numbers and contact information to this, basically, like you said, telemarketing group that's tied into this. And then, so they don't get the care they get. You're saying it's not exactly top of the line. And then they're also wrapped into getting legal representation along with it. Such a strange thing.
Yeah. And it looks like it's all to really maximize the insurance settlement and get the most money they can. And, And then the patients are left with maybe a fraction of what they would have gotten if they had gone with a bona fide attorney. To make matters worse, the attorney that they're going with, people have been signing with a John Baker. I can't find any evidence that this guy is an actual licensed Alabama attorney, let alone this guy actually existing.
Wow.
Scott, barely through this whole process, through this whole story, you barely mentioned the two words that I was waiting on, and that was medical care for people who are hurt. But there is a level of medical care embedded in here somewhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's how they, that's what makes it maybe such a, you know, devious scheme, is that there is some level of, viability to it. But it's all very low-level things that a nurse practitioner can oversee. So talking about, like, traction beds, electrical stimulation machines, stretches, but all the former patients, who I understand now that some lawyers are calling them defectors, all these defectors, the former patients, are now, you know, all the ones I talked to are like, well, we were all just set on the same standard of care, no matter what we were, you know, how we were injured or what they gave us. I mean, they're not doing x-rays. They're it's really low level things. It's like a glorified massage, lack of a better way to explain it. And it just streamlined and everyone goes through the same process.
So they're not seeing any cash. Dalton, is that how you see it? Like, the patients don't see the cash. The scam agents end up with the cash, and they decide what goes to the care of the patient and what goes in their pocket?
Yeah, there's no ever exchange. I mean, the only exchange on the back end, and maybe that's why it's appealing, is because, like, hey, we're going to handle everything for you. And then on the back end, after the insurance company settles with us, then we'll pay you. And, you know, it might be $2,500 and et cetera. And so that sounds like a good deal for people. Another aspect is that, I mean, all of this is based on profiling. These people are contacting specifically people who have never been in wrecks before, so they don't know what to expect. They don't know how, you're supposed to approach a lawyer and what criteria you're looking for. They're obviously racially profiling them because 96 plus, possibly 99% of all the patients that go through this place are Black African American.
Wow.
Possibly trying to profile their income too. So lower income, higher probability that they want those benefits of free care plus paid out on the back end. And then also that leverage they have, where they can be like, hey, we're offering this like incredibly low contingency rate, and all these other lawyers aren't, competing against that. So it's like 28%, which is like way below what most will do for. So it's pretty wild.
Sounds like a good deal to virgin ears.
Talking with Scott Johnson, you need to read this. Old Shell Game Law Firm Embedded in Alabama Medical Clinic's Latest Issue of Lanyap. So you tied this back to Dr. Michael Kent Planbeck, as you said. He was calling it Chiropractic Strategies Group. The owner of the clinic here, how does he tie in to Planbeck? How do they know each other?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, the breadcrumbs that I was able to pick up and lead back, which, I mean, is kind of careless if you're letting a journalist like me do that. But that's probably been the craziest thing about the story for me, is, opening up every single one of these files time and time again and seeing the same address and just finding it in crazy places. So the owner, Chad Loveless, who I understand is, out of Texas, it was hard enough for me to even find out who he was, because he's not listed on any, as the owner of anything. You can file in Alabama under, these filing companies. You don't ever have to name yourself as an owner, et cetera. I found he closed the business out in Florida a couple of years ago, and he uses an address in that filing that he never used anywhere else. And so I was like, well, that's strange. Mm-hmm. Never, So I look up that address, and, suddenly I'm being linked into this guy named Michael Plambeck. I have like no idea. I had no idea who this guy was before. Come to find out, he was prosecuted for this. For what looked like
the exact same scheme.
The exact same scheme 20 years ago. I was just mind blowing. And then every time I've looked into any other players, like I was looking into the lawyer, and the lawyer has kind of pushed himself away from the operation as much as possible, but. I ended up finding some court filings where he's working directly for Plambeck, he's got business filings, and I open them up, and lo and behold, 1919 Veterans Memorial Boulevard in Kenner, Louisiana, 200, and it's just crazy how they all just are like. I was telling Ashley yesterday, our publisher. We could probably put a board, one of those yarn boards up.
Yeah.
And you're stringing everything back together. I literally feel like I'm in the middle of that.
like Charlie, and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That's what you would look like in there. So this is in our backyard, obviously. That's why this is such a big story. Do you think they have many more of these around the rest of the state or country?
I've had sources tell me, they've had as many as 30 of these locations. I know that there's at least maybe 5 in Alabama, so Montgomery, Huntsville, Homewood, or Birmingham, but I understand it goes larger than this. I mean, the lawyer involved, he's a Washington D.C. lawyer, and then he's got like law firms out in Arizona, Tennessee, North Carolina, and it sounds like a regional southeast. Kind of operation, and no telling how much money, they're pushing through. So.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. So where does it go from here, you think? I know you're going to keep digging in, but what's expected next?
Well, the next thing is finding out how these people are getting crash accident information.
Yeah.
And, if you just use deduction, simple deduction logic, it can only be a couple places. So what people don't understand is that traffic crash information is, while it is public, you can't just go and find it. Like, even if if Aaliyah posts it, you have to know the name of the driver, the date of the crash. What's really amazing is that this, 2008, actually Bill Riles with WKRG had a very similar story, and it included Plambeck. A chiropractic clinic opened up right next to the Mobile Police Department, and they had an employee going over to the Mobile Police Department every morning looking at the traffic logs and just writing down numbers whenever they could see the right profile. So, and then they would call them and recruit them in for care before they could get into anywhere else. So Mobile Police Department at that time actually shut that down to where they actually started requiring you, hey, you have to actually know some information about the wreck to get those records. Well, same thing on the state level. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they're getting this information ahead of, sometimes even before these are published, even after they're published, they apparently know what to look for when they are, but they're getting tipped off. And there's only a couple places that can happen. I mean, some people have used body shops before and, tow truck companies before. I don't think any of that's involved here. I think their ambulance chasing is at another level, and it can only be because they've got somebody in law enforcement, somebody with access to the crash system, and they've got to be paying this guy or bribing him to feed tips out. And it's that or healthcare, but I'm leaning more towards law enforcement.
Wow.
What a story, Scott. People need to check this out. It is in the latest edition of Lanyap. We were going to talk with you this morning about some other things you've written on. You stay so dang busy. Great job. But folks need to pick up the latest Lanyap and get some of those stories, like the hotel that could replace the old Spring Hill Armory. What a great job from you on this deep dive, and can't wait. I'm kind of scared, but I can't wait to see what's
next.
Where this goes.
It is like a mystery novel, isn't it? The unraveling this thing.
Yeah, I guess we're being introduced to the chiropractic mafia here.
There you go. Hey, Scott, great stuff. For folks, let them know the newest issues of Lanyap. They're on stands now, as they have always been. But the best way, really, to get Lanyap is online, lanyapmobile.com, because I imagine not long after you click publish on something, it shows up there.
Oh, yes. I published that a day or two before this even appeared in print. So lanyapmobile.com, first $1 for the first month, read everything we have, read the podcast, and find our papers in all the purple boxes. My cover story is right on the cover. So.
We'll see you at the Nappies soon, Scott.
All right. See you at the Nappies, guys.
Good stuff. Scott Johnson, Lanyap, wow, and LanyapMobile.com. What a story there, huh? We started diving into it with Rob last week, but, man.
I'm looking at that sign. I've seen that sign a million times, the sign out in front of the clinic.
Yeah.
I pass it all the time.
Now you'll look at it in an entirely new way.
I definitely am. It's 8:50 now. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk, 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk, 106.5, Mobile Mornings. 8:53, got to wrap this old puppy up here, move along, but it's been, y'all, I got to say, it's been fun while it's lasted.
You're making it sound like it's all over.
Yeah, it's all over now.
Jeff Porcheau on the way, Congressman Barry Moore in hour number one.
This show is like an Iranian nuclear facility. I mean, it's all over. we're just buried in rubble.
April Marie Fogel. If you've never heard her before on this station, she'll be on at 10:30 with Jeff from 1819 News. And then Bradley J. with Breitbart. He really has a great, great handle on things that are going on in D.C. And I'm always interested in hearing what he has to say. So they're all coming up on the Jeff Porcheau here in a few minutes.
Yeah, I like Bradley J. a lot. Local guy, I believe, Clark County or somewhere in between here in Montgomery.
No, you can't trust those guys from Clark County.
He does good work. He's great with Jeff.
Let's get some texts. And Ricky says all doctors and hospitals are insurance scams. I want to tell that to people whose lives are saved at those hospitals and by doctors, Ricky, but nice, okay.
Nice reply, Dalton.
James says, so we get mad at the gross misrepresentation of insurance companies, yet we allow predatory lending to keep our citizens trapped in debt. Priorities. And there's a lot of issues out there. And this is, I mean, this certainly, this whole story from Scott seems like a predatory scheme to the max.
Absolutely.
Certainly. You got to read that story. I'll tell Scott this. Sorry. Texter said, please tell Scott. JC says, thank you for what he does. He knows what he did for our family. Love that guy. I'll get that over to him. Jason, the Batiste comment about a black candidate sounds a lot like what we went through with figures and AL1. Will they ever be called out for the race-based politics and blatant racism? And another texter saying kind of the same thing here. This is Michael, says, why do the inner-city politicians always look at things as blacks against whites? The WKRG News report about Batiste dropping out so that a black person will be in the mayoral runoff just sounds extremely racist. So digging in a little further, that KRG story about the endorsements that came down yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
Batiste and Burrell drop out and endorse Drummond. And so Burrell said in the KRG story, this moment we're in calls for unity. Batiste says polling showed that none of the three black candidates was likely to make a runoff. Quote, you need to position yourself to be one or two, Batiste said. If you're not one or two, it doesn't matter. Number three is the first loser. So the goal is how do we come together and give one of us an opportunity to be in the top two? And they write in this story, there are now three white candidates and one black. The majority of voters in Mobile are African-American, more from Drummond here. I think this gives us a seismic shift to bring the community together. I think that's what it has done for our campaign. What happened wasn't about race. It was about bringing our community together. I'm guessing she said that after Batiste came up and said it was about race.
Well, two things. When you're talking about unity, they're not talking about unity of everybody. They're talking about unity on the black side.
That's kind of how it reads.
And then when you're talking about community, you're not talking about the whole community. You're talking about the black community. That's what they're, I mean.
In that context,
I'm not
sure
it
seems that way.
They're saying it, yeah. So, and don't think that this kind of thought process doesn't go on the white side as well.
Right. But so Drummond said, after, I guess, Batiste said all that, said, what happened wasn't about race. It's about bringing our community together. We've got to build a city that's not built on divisiveness on any level. We need one that is built upon us coming together. And that's what this campaign is all about. They also received some comment from, it looks like, Connie Hudson and Spiro Chariagatis. I haven't seen Prine comment on this story. Hudson said, this is all a part of the political scene. These things happen, but I'm happy now things are moving forward. Chariagatis said, I think like in any race, it all depends on who turns out to vote. I'm hoping I can turn out 100% of my supporters.
Yeah, so Chariagatis, he's going to stay clear of all that. Connie, you know, I'm not exactly apologizing for the moment, but I don't think she felt very comfortable in, with all that going on. But it is a fact. And when you look at the racial makeup of the city, and it's who's going to come out and vote. Because in the history of the city, usually, blacks vote for black candidates. That's kind of like a fact, historical fact. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and so how do you thread that needle as a candidate, right? Because it's obvious that you need certain certain turnout from certain races, I guess. I mean, that's what it's not what it comes down to. It's part of the whole thing. But to come out and say it just is kind of, I don't know.
Yeah,
it puts people on the defense in many ways. Fire Dog says, time to ditch NATO. Leave the feckless, Hamas-loving UN as well. Well, Trump seems like he's just fine with NATO now after these last couple of days and them ramping up the spending. Texture here, 72 degrees, a gentle breeze. Were we at 72 a little bit earlier?
Yeah, we were.
I guess
we
so.
Were.
And we were talking a lot of football. I mean, it's getting closer and closer with all these Jacks and Aggies up there committing to big-time teams. And you've got Saraland, who, I mean, that's just going to be such a stacked game at the beginning of the year. I mentioned St. Michael Catholic and Philip Rivers' team obviously going up there to Jackson as well. And another texture here says Baker playing Jackson in Jackson. Oh, we're setting up for a great high school football season.
I think it was a good game last year. Baker's a good team. We had them on a couple times last year. They played at Baker last year. It's 6:59.